The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
This is We the Youth, a new program for the youth, by the youth, and of the youth, where youth voices lead the conversations about the business of our people. Co-created by our portal for accountability and representation, each episode will feature an in-depth conversation about an area of public policy and offer a platform for youth input. So, join our co-hosts, Rudolph Hanamji and Anaria Mason, along with a daily youth leader, as they talk about the solutions that younger generations have and how the youth can do their part in shaping a vision for TNT. So let's say good afternoon to my co-host. Good afternoon, guys, and welcome.
Good afternoon, Carrie. We're glad to be back. It's Thursday.
It is Thursday.
I know some of the other co-hosts say that the weekend begins on a Thursday. But we're going to definitely get into conversation that we hope people will consider over the weekend period, because this is going to take us into next week's program. But we're very happy to be back here. We the Youth, as you said, created for the youth, by the youth, and of the youth. For the last week, we've been hearing from some very exciting young leaders in different spaces. We started with Nikki Williams on Monday, Mark Pereira on Tuesday, looking at technology. Yesterday, we had Priyana Udith, a young woman leading in the renewable space. And a little later, I'm going to introduce today's guest, who is none other than Javed Razak. But before we get there, today's conversation, Carrie, I think it's exactly the kind of stimulation that young people need to be in touch with. Our title is Our Inheritance, the Oil and Gas Crisis. And I want that to sort of settle with people for a moment. When you think of inheritance, you usually get excited about it. You know, it's something that's coming to you that is a lanyap on what you have maybe earned or generated yourself. It's supposed to be something that's good, that's going to benefit you. But a lot of us, our generations, millennials and younger, we are concerned that unfortunately what we are inheriting from our elders is an ecosystem where our economy is still much too dependent on oil and gas. And of course, in the last few days, with the developments, or should I say, the regressions in relation to the Dragon Gas deal, for example, these issues are exacerbating that apprehension that we have. Because Trinidad and Tobago, our economy, of course, since independence, has been so dependent on oil and gas that it's really created what everyone refers to as the Dutch disease. And it has made us a bit complacent. It has undermined the diversification effort. And with oil and gas revenues being where they're at, production levels being where they're at, what's happening with geopolitical forces in the world, what really is going to be our strategic plan to get ourselves out of this doldrum and into a more exciting space? And yesterday's conversation, of course, with Priyana highlights the tension that is happening between the traditional fossil fuel sector and, of course, the renewable space, where other islands, other countries, they have been embracing renewables. And again, because perhaps they were forced to, they weren't as happy as we were. And they are leagues ahead of where Trinidad and Tobago could have been, should have been. And yes, it's a bit of doom and gloom. And we have to sometimes be very realistic about that. We can't hide from it. We have to face the fact that there is a burning platform, no pun intended. And there is a call now for young people to really step forward, return to whether you're returning from abroad and bringing your knowledge and new ideas back to Trinidad and Tobago, or those of us who are already here, we have to all work together, mobilize, so that maybe we can convert what we're inheriting from a challenge into a new opportunity. And I'm hopeful that we can. But that's why this program was created, to give that platform to discuss some of those ideas and to advocate for youth people in this space. So that's what we're here to discuss today. And Anarian, I know as a practitioner yourself in the field, you have a particular first-hand experience with this. And as a younger person yourself, what you'd like to see happening in this space. And I know you can't wait to sort of deal with all of is going to be another complex issue today.
It is.
But where would you sort of start us off from that younger perspective, looking at the challenge in front of us?
Well, before we even go there, Rudolph, I'd like to say congratulations to all the SEA students who went out this morning and braved the traffic, braved the weather, went and write those exams to prepare for themselves and, you know, put something in place for their own future, because we're going to be handing our inheritance across to them, right?
You wrote SEA?
Yes, I did. I was one of the first students, actually, who wrote SEA. We were the guinea pigs.
Well, I wrote the other one, Common Entrance. So I'm being transparent about my age here.
Well, to each their own.
But I join you in really commending them. That by itself is when we deal with education. And again,
correct, yeah.
Every day until election, we will be dealing with one of these topics. And we do have a show planned around education. And SEA is going to be part of that conversation.
Yeah, so let me not sell out my ideas or my philosophy behind that. But in relation to oil and gas and where we're going, as I was explaining to our guest yesterday, a lot of young people were told in their early ages, well, our age that is, you know, you need to either be a doctor, lawyer, an engineer, you need to get into the oil and gas field, but oil and gas is moving on. We need to find other ways to do things. But that was yesterday's conversation. Trinidad and Tobago's economy is very much tied to the oil and gas, and we still have a lot of things that work with oil and gas. We still have a lot of our education and our tertiary education courses geared towards oil and gas training. Plenty of the tech box schools do oil and gas training, and yeah, so we need to find a way to move forward beyond this. I mean, a lot of people are seeing out in the streets in some of the chats that I'm in things that this Dragon Gas deal fall through is the demise of TNT. So we need to further explore that and see where it goes. What do you think?
Well, it should not have been the demise. It should not have even been framed in the first place in that way. And this is where I don't have a lot of patience with elders who stood in the gap over the last 30 to 40 years, because we all are aware that from the earliest stages of oil and gas production in Trinidad and Tobago, and of course we started with oil,
all right,
and we made that point yesterday that Trinidad and Tobago boasts of being a country that has been producing oil for over 100 years. And I just, again, let that settle for a moment. A century has passed in our history.
Not only that, it's longer than we've been a republic or an independent state.
So when we gained independence, we could no longer blame our former colonial masters.
Correct.
For our future. And since then, there were ample studies and reports completed that showed there would be an international, regional, and local trajectory for this space, for this sector. We knew that at some point in the future, the revenues would start to be less and less. We knew that the production cycles would become more expensive, and we would have known that even back then, people were talking about other technologies that would one day replace traditional fossil fuels. However, even though there have been very successful national policies in the energy space, like Point Lisas and at one time PetroTrin, all of these things, of course, are government policies. A government has to sit and define a policy position, and that policy position is what ensures that resources are allocated, to your point, different types of educational curricula developed,
right, yeah.
Incentives, tax regimes. A lot of things, as we said yesterday, flow from one policy.
Correct.
However, it would seem that while we had the developmental policies to maximize oil, as I said, in the first instance, and then later on, many years later, gas, we cannot find parallel policies that would have prepared the country for this transition period that is happening right now, even though, as I said, we had forewarning. And 15, 20 years ago, this Dragon Gas and other offshore field opportunities brought back these very same conversations. If you go back in the newspapers, Anarion, if you go back online, Google is your friend, and young people out there, you know, in between the TikTok videos and the usual bacchanal that all of us entertain ourselves with, ever so often, you should go and research something as important as this sector. And just look at the fact that 15, 20 years ago, we were talking about these opportunities. And yet, in 2025, what I find is most frightening is that we still found ourselves in a position where this one deal became so important, so crucial.
It is literally all the eggs in one basket.
There are policymakers who have said categorically all the eggs are not in one basket, but I am trying to find the other baskets.
Well,
have you identified any?
You and I both. I mean, we know what the baskets should be.
Should have been.
In essence, such as different sectors like agriculture, tourism, things like that. But at the end of the day, when you sit down and you listen to the budget and you sit down and you listen to the reading of things, everything is tied to what they expect the crude oil going to be and what gas is going to be. There is no set of
additional metrics that they use.
It's not additional. Yes, additional metrics, but at the same time, they don't look at how much cocoa is going to sell or how much they might sell rice or this or the other different things in the agriculture.
The other commodities.
Correct. And that in itself is a downfall to me.
Well, it underscores the prevailing mindset of many policymakers, past and present, where oil and gas, of course, was the easy way to generate the revenues.
Right.
And a majority of that revenue has actually, unfortunately, been spent in non-productive spaces. And what I mean by that is, if you look at other economies that are doing quite well, like the Nordic spaces, Singapore, we like to speak about these models, right? When they found a revenue-heavy sector, what they did is they ensured that a sizable, not it was not always the majority, but a sizable portion of that revenue was deliberately and intentionally invested into other productive spaces. So, for example, Trinidad and Tobago had the fortune of being able to invest in education. And at one time, we had and we still do to an extent, notwithstanding the brain drain issue, the largest per capita head of accountants, knowledge workers, attorneys, and other trained persons, right?
All right.
We allowed many of those people, up to 70% based on certain reports, to leave our shores, rather than create, again, using some of the revenue to not only invest in educating them, but in building out capacity for them to use that knowledge right here. Investing in infrastructure, in research and development, in technical institutes. So this is why we have to have this conversation, because younger people know what they're looking for and they have to inform the policy moving forward.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, as our title to this episode says, our inheritance, we need to know what it is we want, what we want our country to be like. So, for example, listeners and viewers out there, if it is for a second, you can close your eyes for a minute and envision what Trinidad looks like 10 years, 15 years from now. Do you think our current policies and our current things give that way to where you envision it? Do you envision water for all? Do you envision a renewable space? And I have a bit of a tidbit for you for that renewable thing. The project Priyana spoke about yesterday in Point Lisas.
Yes.
The Lara project. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, that is being done at BC, Brechin Castle.
Yes.
Which
you have to tell people what that was. Because not everybody.
A lot of young people will know what BC stands for. It's Brechin Castle. It's actually where our sugarcane mm-hmm. factory was. And to see the fact that this factory is now being converted to this renewable space shows that we moved along from a agricultural society to a renewable one. Well, at least hopefully a renewable one. And with that being said, I know we're very close to bringing our guest on. So I think this is a good time to take a break. So let me pass you back to Carrie. And she'll take us away.
Thank you so much, guys. And of course, those who are viewing us live on CNC3, continue sending us those messages via WhatsApp 306-1065. We will be live on CNC3 until 4 p.m. And then the conversation continues right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. We'll be back.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, thank you for joining us on CNC3 as well as Freedom 106. So allow me to introduce our guest today. He has about 15 years experience in the energy sector, first as a geophysicist with the Ministry of Energy, and then later on where he moved across to Rams Logistics. Javid has worked in exploration and production projects across Trinidad and Tobago, Guyana, Suriname, and most recently one of the most hot topics, the Dragon gas field. With a BSc from UWE in Petroleum and Geoscience and a master's from Aberdeen University in Oil and Gas Enterprises, allow me to introduce our guest today, a very young guy by the name of Javid Raza.
Welcome Javid.
All right, nice to be here.
Thank you for being brave enough to discuss this topic with us.
No problem.
We know oil and gas is explosive, right?
Literally.
Pun intended.
Yes.
But Javid, before we get into some of the issues that I was trying to introduce and Anarian also touched on, for other younger people out there who are looking on, listening, we always ask the guests to share a little bit about their personal journey, because, you know, there are people out there who have an idea of what they'd like to do in their lives. Mm-hmm. But unless they hear from someone that's close to their age, they might think it's not possible, mm-hmm. or they don't have an idea as to what they could look at to motivate them. So tell us about Javid. What brings you to this space? What are some of the milestones you might have been proud to achieve, and what really drives you to want a better Trinidad and Tobago?
Sure. So my whole career has been more or less accidental, I would say, right? So after high school, I was in pressure gunners. I did science subjects. You're kind of in a engineering type mode, you know?
Right.
I didn't particularly know which of the engineerings. And at that point, nobody really knows what any of them are. You kind of just have an idea based on the name.
True.
And by the way, that is something when we speak about education, we want to touch on.
Right.
We think that more should be done to bring awareness at that level. But that's a good point.
So a lot of people don't know very much about what the different streams are about. They just have an idea. Maybe they have family or friends in those things. So petroleum geoscience was one of those kind of confusing, or people didn't really know about fields in engineering at UWE. So I did choose to do that, which basically is about geology and geophysics, and specifically geared towards oil and gas exploration. So I completed that program at UWE. Very interesting. It had industry experience at the time, so I was able to intern for a year at BP while in that program. And afterwards, because of scholarship, I was placed at the Ministry of Energy.
Congratulations.
Well, a long time ago, but yes. And that was, to me, ideal, because I wanted to be able to understand the sector from like a broad point of view. The ministry, obviously, is the regulator. They work on all the different projects across the country, upstream, downstream, everything else. So I got a good 3 years in there. It was a very active time in the sector. A lot was happening. I worked on many different projects with a lot of the different companies. And after that, I went to Scotland to do my master's. I got a Scheveningen scholarship from through the UK government. And the whole purpose of that scholarship really was to produce potential leaders in the country that would help bridge gaps between the countries like the UK and Trinidad, as well as, you know, help benefit the countries here.
Well,
right?
So far it's working, because here you are.
Well, hopefully, right? And when I came back now, it was 2015. Now, in that time, the time I had left Trinidad and come back, a lot of things had happened, if you remember. 2014 to 15, the oil price crashed tremendously. It went from like $100 to almost $20 a barrel.
Yes.
There were layoffs across the world. Mm-hmm. And then there was some slight recovery in 2015. I think when I came back, it was just after the election. So the government had changed, the ministries had changed, the ministers had changed, all those type of things. So a lot of things were different. So I ended up kind of in no man's land for a little while, and I actually was working with an insurance company for a while, because that was what I could get at that point, yeah. Right?
With your high level qualifications.
Yeah.
I don't want that point to escape people, right? Because Anarin's one of his favorite words is underemployed.
Right. Well, so I mean, And by the way, that's a very lucrative career for those who are good at it, right? Probably more lucrative than most
fair
other
enough,
careers.
Fair
true.
Enough.
Yeah.
So again, I was doing that, was interesting, wasn't doing too badly really, and accidentally stumbled into Rams Logistics, which through my alumni and stuff like that, I was referred to a meeting. I thought it was just, in fact, I was at that time doing some freelance articles for The Guardian. At the time, on the Business Guardian. And
so you've come full circle.
I suppose so. And I think it caught the eye of the CEO and some other persons, and they just said, let's have a chat. I just thought it was a chat. And it was actually about Guyana I was writing, because at that time they had first...
Of course.
They just had the first discovery. And I was just writing a sort of prediction about what could happen, what might happen, what are some of the challenges, what are some of the opportunities for Trinidad and things like that. And didn't realize that this company was already in there. They were already working directly with Exxon, who had just found the oil. So they saw that. We had a discussion. I came on in a kind of unknown capacity. Just was like, bring it on, let's see what happens. We'll figure it out.
Innovation.
Right. Take a chance, just whatever. Yeah. You sound like you might be somewhat smart, so let's see what happens, right?
Somewhat.
And then I've now been dabbling now in many different areas, many different fields for the last 8 years or so. Including contracts, proposals, business development, HR, legal, risk, and a whole bunch of things that across the company, across the group in different countries, but a lot geared towards the oil and gas sector. So broadened from a technical person to I guess
a generalist. But that's good sometimes.
And
it's commendable of you to have that mindset where you're able to adapt and learn new things, because not many people... Well, not. I shouldn't be generalist, but some people can't do that.
No, and I think that's one of the key skills when you're looking at young people now, especially people who graduate. They're not very rarely guaranteed to get a job in the field that they study, especially if it's science-related fields nowadays. And you have to be able to adapt and figure out where you could add value otherwise. And there's lots of opportunities for that, and I think people are kind of coming around to it now. So you asked, what are some of the things that makes me passionate? And,
yes.
And the main thing, I think, really, is how we can better utilize our greatest resource, mm-hmm. which is not oil and gas, but the people, right?
Yeah.
We
are there with you on that.
Good.
Character.
And as you had mentioned before, we had one of the highest, we still have one of the highest rates of university graduates, mm-hmm. very intelligent people, Trinidadian smart, right?
Yes.
If nothing else. Maybe too smart sometimes, right? But how do we take these persons and put them in places where they can add real value to the country in all different types of ways, right? And I've been able, through this role, we've been able to hire a lot of really young, smart people who have been able to actually grow businesses, Forex-generating businnesses.
There you go.
And create an environment where we can nurture that, and that's one of the things that we do in.
And you've seen this firsthand, as
yeah,
you
I'm
say.
Seeing it firsthand,
so this is
as
not
we speak.
Something that you've read about. People.
No, this is right now.
He's been part of this as a young person himself.
Several multi-million-dollar businesses created through within the group, generating forex, providing jobs, exporting services, exporting people, as the case might be as well. And it gives a lot of people an opportunity. Now, so to me, it's just a micro example of what we could do as a whole country, right?
Yes.
It's almost like
a great case study.
And a good case study, a good testing grounds to see what could go right, what could go wrong. Of course, many things go wrong. And kind of get a better idea of what is the environment that you need to nurture and facilitate these type of businesses. So all the other work and everything like that is really for that goal in my mind.
Narian jumps in. Yesterday we were talking about, and not just yesterday, Nara, since Monday, we were mm-hmm. talking about the need for older people to collaborate more effectively, or both generations then, mm-hmm. both sides, I should say, of the spectrum, to collaborate more effectively. And I want to use this opportunity to shout out Sean Rampersad and mm-hmm. his family and team that run Ramps, because other companies as well, you do see where persons put aside their egos, they look at opportunities through a younger person's lens, mm-hmm. and they empower you all to generate success, and everybody benefits. The challenge has been in the public sector space.
Yes.
We do not see that. It's there sometimes, but it is not the run of the day, you know, the mandate, so to speak, that all of these agencies, ministries should have this type of approach to encouraging young people to actively, not passively, not just be there to run rudimentary tasks, but to take ownership of key projects.
You know, one of the things we talk about a lot is if you want a successful enterprise, a business, whatever it might be, you need a good combination or the right combination of what we call PPT, right? People, process, and technology, right? So you need the right people. You need the right people in leadership, for sure. That's one of the most critical elements. Those people tend to create good processes, right? So one of the things the public service has really good processes, very well detailed documented, but not necessarily right leadership in the public service.
Or implementation.
Well, but again, yeah, I'm correct. If you have the right leadership, the right things like that, and the right people, those people drive the implementation, right? And of course, technology is there to improve and make things more efficient. If you have the right technology and the right processes, you can have no progress. In fact, the public service has very good processes, but not necessarily the other things, right? So that is definitely one of the areas of the country that needs to be like a serious focus. And I mean, they kind of summarize that people call it like ease of doing business, things like that, right? But how do you foster that environment?
Well, interestingly enough, you mentioned PPT, because I know PPT to be PowerPoint presentations. But I love your acronym for it, People, Process, and Technology.
Yes.
I mean, with that being said, we are in the election season, mm-hmm. Dravid, and there are a lot of things being said by a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
What have you heard that may entice you as a young person to come out and vote in regards to the oil and gas policies that are coming forward?
So, funny enough, across many different governments, you see very little change in their oil and gas policy, right? More or less. I mean, it's a strength as well as a weakness, right? The strength is that countries and companies that we deal with, international companies, feel like, okay, regardless of a government change, we feel like policy will be consistent.
Okay, that's right. A fair point. Right?
There's stability and things like that, right? And by the way, I mean, we not getting political, but the Dragon and cross-border gas fields have been pursued by several different administrations.
Of course,
across decades, right? So it's not something. So that stability of policy is important. But you also, if you're looking to revamp, renew, re-energize the energy sector, the oil and gas sector, then you need to have some parallel policy in addition to the. So you need the run-of-the-mill things to continue.
Right.
And then you need some initiatives that are being really propelled to make things different, right? And we've seen one of those initiatives in the last administration, which is Dragon and the Venezuelan gas. I mean, credit to the government for really actively leading on that, right? People could debate whether it made sense or not, or whether it was the right thing or not, but given everything that I understand and know, it definitely was worth pursuing, right? And there are criticisms about how it was done and transparency and information and all these things. But it certainly was worth pursuing and still is worth pursuing, even though it's much more difficult right now.
Right now.
Yeah.
Anarian, as Javed is talking, that came up as well yesterday and previous con. And one of the things that we're going to be looking at by the end of this series are these common threads in these conversations that we can identify as pillars to create an enabling proposal, if you will. Say, mm-hmm. These are the common denominators across industries, sectors, fields. And what I'm getting at is both of us use the word parallel.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to, you know, the saying, walk and chew gum simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
How do we empower this large proportion of young people who are ready and energized and just waiting to be, so maybe while the more experienced elders are focused on, as you say, the bread and butter matters, maybe these parallel initiatives should be farmed out. And we said yesterday, for example, why don't agencies put an ad out that says, we have 5 signature policies or programs we'd like to launch, but we need capacity. Because Carrie asked that question, you know, how do we get it done? Where are the resources? Who's gonna actually do it? And that is perhaps one of the things that is a common thread that is emerging. What do you think about approaches like that in terms of intentionally carving out projects specifically for young professionals?
So I think that nothing will work without the right leadership.
So right? You go back to leadership, square one.
It has to, and I don't just mean Prime Minister leadership,
at different levels.
Right, you could have all the money, all the technology, all the programs, in fact, we do. if you look across the country and all these different government agencies, there's tons of grants and this and that and all these different programs still amount to very little at the end of the day, right? Lack of focus, lack of leadership. So if you want to just backtrack for 1 second, right, and we ask the question, why is it that we produce oil and gas? What is it exactly that we do that for? Right? Okay, it's for the government to get to earn revenue.
Yes.
The biggest chunk, by far the majority of revenue, comes from oil and gas in some form or fashion. And of course, most importantly, the foreign exchange, right? Because also the vast majority of the US dollars comes from that. How do they get the revenue from oil and gas? So companies, the upstream companies, the BPs and Shells, and they produce oil and gas and they get directly taxed by the government.
Right.
And the government gets some directly from that. That gas goes downstream. It's used by companies like state companies like NGC who pay taxes, right? Then their workers pay taxes. You go further downstream in Point Lisa, Atlantic, LNG, and so on. Those companies make profits from producing their methanol and ammonia and all these things like that. And
which then, are taxed.
Which are taxed, corporation tax, and so on. Of course, their employees are taxed. And then the government has shares in Atlantic and in some of the Point Lisa's plans, so they also earn direct revenues from that as well. And of course, then the entire services sector around it employ people who pay taxes. The those companies pay profit, corporation taxes,
green fund levy, what have you.
Of course, all those different things. And then there's all the third parties that benefit from that, all the food establishments and the hotels and
transportation,
etc. Right? So, you know, airlines and everything else. So even when you check what's oil and gas revenue directly, it doesn't count all those other things. It doesn't count when the hotels are filled up from those things or the planes are filled up from crews going to rigs. So this is why. So if you want to replace or even add to oil and gas revenue, it's not an easy thing to do. It's not a simple matter of agriculture or tourism. Those are supposed to be parts of the pie that you're supposed to be growing. As you said, it's very easy with oil and gas. Some other companies basically do all the work for you, right? They basically do all the work for you. There's not much that you need to do, right? If you want to grow agriculture and things like that, there's not one or two companies that are going to come in like BP and Shell and do all the work for you. You're talking about thousands of people, right?
So, and in much the same way that oil and gas evolved over decades, these are also sectors that don't begin blossoming overnight
I mean, even as much as oil and gas is a long-term kind of thing, some of these things require even more, and a lot of enabling environment has to be there, right?
There you go.
You can't talk about tourism if you're not talking about crime. You can't talk about agriculture if you're not talking about crime and water access and all these things. So the point I'm getting at is that to replace oil and gas is not an easy thing to do. So it's been a very large impediment for any government to say,
we wanted to replace oil and gas, but we wanted to upscale the other sectors. And I think that may be a good segue point for our viewers and them to, you know, contemplate that as we take another break.
Sure.
And thank you guys who are looking at us, viewing us live on CNC3. Don't forget you can send us those messages via WhatsApp 306-1065. This is We the Youth, and today's discussion is about our inheritance, the oil and gas crisis. We're going to take a break and be back.
Expression is who we are. Take control. The all-new Talk Radio. Freedom 106.5. Speak your mind.
And welcome back to We the Youth. Brand new programming here live on CNC3 and Freedom 106.5 FM every day, 3 to 5 p.m. The first hour, we're on CNC3 simulcast. And then from the 4 to 5 hour, we'll be remaining in studio here to take your calls and messages. Remember, get those ready. 306-1065 for WhatsApp messages and 625-2257 for calls. Today, we're looking at, if you've just joined us, we're looking at the issue of the oil and gas crisis. We're framing it as an inheritance that younger generations are going to be either benefiting from or having to treat with as we get older and take the reins of leadership in the nation. And of course, we're joined live. Today's youth expert is Javed Razak, and he's a geoscientist and someone who has many years of experience looking at these issues. So Javed, we want to deal with this dragon gas challenge, but I want you to just spend 1 minute to remind people of what happened in the oil space that made gas become so important so that they could understand why dragon, because people still confuse the two. I've heard people out there, average citizens, believe Argon Field, you're going to be dealing with oil and gas. So take them through that and carry us into your assessment of what's going on with Dragon.
Sure. So oil was discovered first onshore in Trinidad, right? More than 100 years ago. In fact, the first oil well ever drilled in the world was drilled in Trinidad in 1857.
So you bearing me out on that, right? Because I said that yesterday and people looked at me like, where did you get that data point?
Not Pennsylvania, Trinidad, right? So fast forwarding a bit, right? Oil production peaked around the 80s in Trinidad. It was around 230,000 barrels a day, right? We're currently at about 50,000 barrels a day, thereabouts, right?
Just to give people that perspective, right?
So what happened with oil is that the reservoirs kind of dried up, right? For the most part, as in production declined over time. So oil became less significant as a mix.
And just quickly, as an expert, yesterday we got into it a little bit. Sometimes that means, if I understand it, because I'm not a geoscientist, but from what my reading, I understand that some wells, there's still oil there, but it's more difficult to get.
Yeah.
But then you also do have some wells that really and truly are no longer, no longer collect. They don't have oil, even if you could get it.
In general, if you have an oil reservoir, you're never going to produce more than 20-30% of it. Right.
That is a very important fact.
Think about it. Like
20-30%.
Yeah, maybe you could get some more in some cases, you know, depending on the geology. Think about it. If you throw a bottle of pitch oil on the ground and you try to get it all up,
you're never going to get it all up, right?
Wonderful analogy.
Or you throw it into the sand in the beach.
Oh, well.
Right, think about it.
It's an even better analogy because the soil we're dealing with.
Well, it's sand. It's just hard sand, right? So good. You can't get it all back out. So oil production started to decline. Now, back in the 80s, we discovered gas fields. Now, back then, they used to flare gas, right? More
we
or less.
Remember those pictures, some of us.
But worldwide, it's a flare gas.
Yes.
So there wasn't much use for gas then. As the downstream energy industry started to develop, gas became something useful. So instead of just throwing it away, gas was something that you could actually use. You could start using gas for generating power. You could use it for petrochemicals, for ammonia, methanol, and so on. And Trinidad was pioneering back then, right? When they formed Point Lisas Industrial Estate, we were one of the first countries to start using gas.
Which was an excellent government policy.
Yes, it was a big thing back then. We were one of the first countries, created the estate, and began getting these plants to come in here because we had so much gas, right? And it was that's why we became the highest producer of methanol at one point. Correct. I think one of the highest in ammonia, you know. And
and at one time, we provided America with 100%. Or close to 100% of their
requirements.
Their requirements.
I don't know if it was 100%.
I don't think it was that high.
But it was a lot.
We were probably the single biggest exporter
of gas at one point. And at one point in time, Atlantic LNG was the largest LNG producer in the Western Hemisphere, right?
That is
for very briefly. And it was in the top 10, I believe, for quite a long time.
And we're still one of the top producers of fertilizer as well, exporters of fertilizer, aren't we?
Well, the ammonia and methanol that is used to make fertilizer, which is part of a different discussion about why we don't actually make those things down here, right? So gas became more important worldwide, and at the same time, our oil production started to drop. So we end up in the mix now where, I don't know the exact number, but I will guess, give me it at about 75% or 2/3 of the revenue comes from gas and the rest from oil, right? About 1/3 or maybe a quarter from oil. So oil is important. What happens is gas production declines much faster than oil. Think of it like a sweet drink bottle that you shake up and open. That gas is like the reservoir. It gets flat fairly quickly.
So when you hear billion cubic tons or it doesn't mean that it's going to be there forever.
Well,
it's huge.
Well, it's in the ground.
Yes.
What you could actually produce might be less. So gas, maybe oil, you could produce 20-30%. Gas, you could probably produce 50-60% of it, right? Now, just to set the stage for you, our peak gas production was around 2010, 2011, 2012. It was 4.3 billion cubic feet a day BCF, right? So you'll see that. 4.3 was how much we were producing. That's basically the country's max capacity. That's when everything is working at full capacity.
Right.
We're currently at about 2.5 BCF, right? 2.5 is a little more than half of the of that, right? So we have about 50-something% of that. Okay, cool. So that's just dropped in 2012 to now, maybe over 12 years, we've dropped to almost half the gas production. So similar ripple effect on the economy, on Forex, and you start to understand
but
that.
Just again, quickly, before we, because I think we have to take a break.
Yes, we do.
But when we come back, I want you to explain why. Why that drop.
Okay.
And thank you, guys. Continue sending us those messages via WhatsApp 306-01065. We are live here on CNC3 and on Freedom 106.5 FM. This is We the Youth. We're going to take a break and be back.
This April, Freedom 106.5 FM presents Voices for the Silent, a campaign dedicated to raising awareness and standing up against child abuse. Too many children suffer in silence. It's time to change that. We're here to arm you with the tools, knowledge, and resources you need to identify, prevent, and respond to child abuse. Join us as we amplify the voices of survivors and take actionable steps to support at-risk children. Together, we can break the silence and be the change they need. Let's be the voice for those who cannot speak. Together, we can make a difference. Stand up, speak out, take action. Supported by the Children's Authority of Trinidad and Tobago. Power up your Saturdays with Carrie V's electrifying energy on Speak Your Mind Saturdays. Here, you're not just tuning in. You're transforming the show into a vibrant tapestry of opinions, laughter, and spirited debates. Get set for a day packed with the fun, the burning issues, and Carrie V's infectious personality. Join the fun. Fuel the conversation. Speak Your Mind. Saturdays with Carrie V on Freedom 106.5 FM. The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.
And welcome back to We the Youth, where we are bringing youth leaders to the table to discuss national policy issues and what the vision is for Trinidad and Tobago in the millennials, the Zeds, and the Alpha generations' minds. And just before we run out of this first hour, where we are live on CNC3, and remember, in the second hour, we remain live in station Freedom 106.5. So if you're looking at us on CNC3 and you want to continue to listen to the rest of the conversation, you're going to need to tune in to the radio, and we're going to be taking calls and text messages in that hour. Just before we close this first hour on the simulcast, Javed, before the break, you made that important point that at some point in time, we started to experience a decline in the gas production. Mm-hmm. So we had the oil, decline in the oil, and then we had the gas boom, and then a decline. Please explain that, and then, as we said before, feel free to then explain what's happening now. Good. With this dragon issue.
Sure. So I was trying to think of an analogy that makes sense for the public, right, with gas. So think of it like this. Think of gas as a barrel of water that you have some fish inside that live inside of there, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the barrel have a hole in it, and that water is continuously emptying out. Now, to keep that barrel full of water, you had a, let's say you have different tanks in your yard, right? Okay. Water tanks, and you have hoses connected to that barrel. You have to keep several of these hoses on to keep that barrel full.
Right.
Right, or keep the fish alive, right? The fish is, in this case, is our economy, let's say, right? And the energy sector. And there plants and so on. Good. Now, these tanks are different sizes. They're different distances away from the barrel. The hoses come with different pressure. They have different rates of flow and all these kind of things. Good.
Many variables.
Good. Now, this thing is draining out every single day, all the time. Just to keep the barrel at the same level requires continuous exploration and development of fields and new production all the time. Now, like I told you, gas fields don't last very long, right? Maybe five years, maybe 10 years, things like that. On average, right? Oil fields tend to last a lot longer. Again, think of the sweet drink bottle that you shake up.
Yes, and you said about 50%
you can extract, right, in terms of the gas. So you have to have a continuous stream of projects all the time to keep gas going, right? What happened is that there was not a continuous stream of projects that kept more gas coming in, right? Now the government, what has to do is try to incentivize projects to keep coming online. So how they could do that? They have what they call bid rounds. They put out acreage for companies to bid on. Those companies bid and then they explore. By the way, the chance of success in exploration is generally 10%. So even when you have acreage signed and stuff like that, it's very, very difficult. You have to have a lot of shots. It's like,
so to use your fish analogy, you have to cast many nets.
You have to cast many
wide nets.
Correct.
And we know all of this.
Very good. And so good. So you have a lot of that needs to happen at the same time. The government also has taxation incentives that they can use. And so what happened was really a failure to have continuous stream of projects to keep that gas production high. Now, when you look and you see it in the news right now, other than Dragon, there's about 9-10 different projects in the way. those projects are all there to keep the fish and to keep the water at where it is right now, more or less. So if it's so about
more
half
or less
level,
to maintain.
Right. So if it's the barrel's half full right now, all those projects is to just keep that barrel half full for the next couple of years. Right? Now here's the thing about Dragon. Dragon was only going to produce 300 million standard cubic feet a day, 0.3 BCF. Mm-hmm. Let's say a little more than 10% of what we currently have, right? But Dragon is a large field and was going to produce for about 25, 30 years. So unlike the ones in Trinidad Waters that produce...
So that was the main difference.
So that's a big difference,
long-term
right?
Long-term feasibility.
And it's there. You don't have to go and discover it. It's already been discovered. Right. So it's not 10% chance of success. It's already known to be there. But the biggest part about Dragon was that it opens the door for the other cross-border fields. One of them, they were signed, Malakin Coquina, that's about 1 TCF.
Yes, we heard of that
right. That got cancelled as well. And then the big, big, big prize is the Loran side of the Loran Manatee, right? Loran Manatee is the biggest gas field ever discovered anywhere around Trinidad. It's a 10 TCF field. In fact, that field has as much gas as the rest of the country combined, right? That is discovered right now. So the access to all of those things was kind of contingent on if you get Dragon going, you could get these things going. If you got all those things going at the same time, then you would have enough capacity to probably get your back up to where you need to be. Right now, there's one big, big, big field, well, fairly big, called Calypso. There's a couple of fields that BHP found in 2016 to 19 that is the deep water fields. We have never produced from the deep water right now. A lot of focus should have, some did, of course, to get that off the ground. Now, this is the year where they have to come to what they call FID, final investment decision,
right,
on that.
Right.
Right? There's a bit of concern if that is going forward or not. We were hoping to hear that would happen already. We heard that Woodside sold off some of their fields to Perenco in shallow water. So it's uncertain whether they decide to stay there or not. We've heard a lot of things about whether it's economic for them or not. Because even though the field is big, it's so far away that it's very expensive to produce. And deep water gas is a fairly not a very common thing in the
world.
And
at the end of the day, these companies are commercial enterprises.
Correct.
With shareholders.
Right.
So it's not that they hate or love Trinidad, but they're
that
looking at what is commercial sense.
Right.
And we have to accept that, right?
And you have to keep in mind, as geopolitics continuously evolve, some other country and some other project could become more attractive overnight, especially when you have tariffs changing all the time, right?
Yeah.
So if the US is incentivizing drilling, some of the same companies might say, hey,
there
this is
go.
All of a sudden more attractive over here. So we cannot stay static in the way that we deal with petroleum regulation. We have to be continuously evolving. By the way, if we didn't realize, we have two neighbors who have now become the hottest places
in
the world.
Well, I was waiting for one of us to get into
Well, of course, we're going to get into that
triangle
in the second hour. And again, to remind our viewers at home, we're on every day from 3
the
to 4
best
on
insight, instant feedback, CNC accountability, the all-new
and Freedom
Talk Radio, 106.5.
Freedom
106.5.
For the first hour, we continue here where you can join in the conversation. You can send us a WhatsApp, you can have a call with us. And yeah, I thank you all for joining us on CNC3. Now hop over to Freedom 106 and that takes us to the top of the hour.
Thank you so much, Anarion. And of course, don't forget you can join us after 4 p.m. on Freedom 106.5 FM. Continue sending us those messages via WhatsApp 306-1065, or you can engage with us directly via phone 625-2257 or 627-3223. As we now go to the 4 p.m. headlines, we want to sign off from CNC3 and thank you for joining us. We'll continue the discussions after 4 p.m. right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. And we're back. Good afternoon. Freedom 106.5 FM. Carrie V is here. I'm in your company. Along. Couldn't we have a name? We the Youth? We, like a real cool, awesome kind of superhero, kind of vibe, kind of, yeah.
So I have to wear my cape tomorrow.
Yeah. Right. Wear the cape. Make sure it's not one of them colors. Make sure it's a proper color. Or all the colors mixed together. What color is that?
What about red, white, and black? Too boring?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, but it's Freedom 106 colors.
You don't worry about that. Good afternoon, guys. Welcome back. What's wrong with Anarion? What's wrong with him?
Nothing is wrong with
him
at all.
Maybe he's in deep contemplation. This
I think
complex
so.
Topic.
Yeah.
It keeps him up at night, you know, guys.
Oil and gas is a serious thing, you know. And you know, right? Let me say good afternoon to our guest again. Hi, how you doing?
Javed, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining us. And let me just remind our listeners, send us those messages via WhatsApp 306-1065. We are talking about our inheritance, oil and gas, because that's all we know. Yeah.
Don't forget the crisis.
The crisis.
Part.
Well, I was waiting for you all to say that.
We have any messages there?
Yes, we do. So let's see. And you can even give us a call at 625-2257 or 627-3223. Hey, good afternoon, guys. A wonderful discussion.
Thank you. The young gentleman,
which is the guest, speaks so simple that it's so easy to follow. I'm really enjoying it. Thanks so much.
Excellent.
That is amazing. Let me see here. Good afternoon, Carrie V, to you and your guests. It is indeed refreshing to listen and appreciate this type of discourse, which continues to generate an alternative way of thinking. Congratulations to you all through this medium. I am hopeful that some leaders as well as some callers will refocus their warped mindset of the oil and gas syndrome and gravitate to a shifting paradigm. I look forward to similar discourses through this invigorating segment.
I'm taking a screenshot of that message.
I'm going to forward it to you.
Yes.
More so
thank
since
you so
the
much.
Dragon has died and can't dance. Thank you to all. That's from Mr. Mischief. Yeah, his name.
Narayan Javed has Dragon. I mean, let's use some of the terminology,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Dragon has necessarily died. I think maybe the Dragon has gone back to sleep for a moment.
Just a little bit,
I would think that, you know, it's gone back to sleep. Of course, we'll see some negotiations taking place. They did say there was going to be, it's not an appeal, but a way to reverse the decision.
Mm.
And let's see what comes out of that. But again, I'm an advocate for expanding our economy and growing markets. So don't let's all put our eggs in that dragon mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you are a process man. I keep saying that. And a risk mitigation man.
Right.
And one of the challenges, of course, with Dragon was that variable of this geopolitical behemoth that is America. And you can't get away from the fact that we sort of talked about it. It was there. But there was always this expectation that they would play ball, they would support us in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Javed, just to go back a little bit, just before we started this hour, you were really taking us through, as the message said, in a very logical, easily digestible manner. We got to the point where you started to explain the differences in the fields that are available to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you are about to explain where we could take, you know, now that we understand that, where should we be looking at and how do we manage this potential, but yet a difficult reality to manifest?
So there's good news and there's not good news, right?
Mm. Okay.
So the not good news is that the easy gas that is available, discovered, and exists, and we know that it's there and it's fairly easy to produce technically,
mm-hmm.
is the Venezuelan gas, right? The Dragon one, the Loran one, the Mannequin.
I thought God
one, right?
was a trini.
Well,
I saw an ID card.
God also helped those who help themselves, right?
So he's neither Venezuelan nor trini in this. Sorry, you know, sometimes if you don't laugh, you'll cry. But go ahead.
So, no, we have to help yourself,
yes.
right? So we have all the tools to help ourselves, right? So, as you said, weather dragon, the gas is there in Dragon Field. It's there. It's not going anywhere. It could change later if the U.S. government changes. It could change if Trump changes his policies, which could depend on a whole different host of things, right?
Yeah.
So this could have change, but let's plan as though it's not going to change, right?
Exactly.
So that's how we should plan.
Right.
Good.
Okay.
It was worth an attempt. It was worth a try. It didn't work out. Okay, good. Gamble lost, right? The problem is we didn't seem to have a second... Something.
As or a
strong,
couple contingency
right?
plans
right.
in parallel.
So in terms of the gas part of it, there's one big possible thing that is within our control,
okay.
which is the deep water gas that BHP had discovered that's now
underway. Which you mentioned,
right?
Right.
The field is called Calypso, right? So if Calypso is going to sing, in this case not dance like Dragon,
okay.
I like that one.
That's right. The title of Javed's next article.
I'll keep that in mind, right? If Calypso is going to sing, so the challenge is there is that it's not a large amount of gas relative to how expensive it is to produce, right? So it's very far away, right? The tank is far away, somebody else's yard almost, right? So they have to come with very good tax terms with the company.
You were saying earlier, the enabling ecosystem
right.
to really make it attractive.
Now, this has already been discovered. They have contracts signed already. So the tax terms are already outlined in there. So really and truly, the government is not supposed to change that. But of course, they could. And
they could make it better.
That negotiation is happening, I understand. But I don't know if it's going great. We would have hoped by now that it should have already materialized. Now, whether the company Woodside decides to remain in Trinidad, we'll see. Now, there are at least two other big companies who could take up that field, probably BP and Shell, who have interest in Atlantic and everything else. So the problem with these things is that, remember, this tank is draining out. This barrel of the fish is draining out every single day.
Right, which is right? What we use every day. The barrel that we pull from now.
Right. Mm. The longer we take to put on the new hoses.
Of course.
So if you say today that this deep water project is a go ahead, we're giving it full go ahead.
Right.
It'll take probably 7 years to get it online.
And that's part of the challenge.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
Now, that's a technical
that's
part.
Just how
the part that's ridiculous is that you found it in 2019
that's
and it takes
it.
6 years.
That's what you meant.
Because otherwise, now we would have been just 2 years away from it.
Is what is ridiculous.
So that's the ridiculous part, because you're talking about, in a case like that with deep water, you're talking about from the time you sign a contract with the government, the first gas, you're talking about 20 years. Right? But discovered in the 80s. I think Dragon was in the 90s. So
exactly. These are not new prospects.
Right? So now...
But those are cross-borders. So they do have, you know...
Additional technical...
circumstances that will lead
Their challenges were geopolitical, right?
Right.
Now, so the thing is, these things take a long time. There's a lot of things that have to happen. Yes. Engineering, design, it takes years to get this thing done, right? But the part I have control over is the internal approval processes and stuff like that within the country, right? I'm fast-tracking that. It's not supposed to take longer to do the economic models than it's supposed to, and the negotiations, than it's supposed to take to actually drill and install pipelines.
And by the way, we do
have
AI today.
Right. So the thing about it is, whoever is leading these ministries, whoever is leading the government, the same way that they went after Dragon and they physically have been in Venezuela, and you have to lead with that kind of energy.
That same gusto.
Yes. You have to do. You have to be on top of that every single day. You have to treat that like if you're building treat that like you're building your own house, and you have to be watching that every day, and you have to make sure everything happening every day.
Javed, you know, I will go out on a limb here, because maybe I can, right? I think I've been hearing this narrative out there that apparently some people in the country are happy that this unfortunate revelation took place, because according to some people it was going to happen,
right?
But I don't think, while there might be some people who are unfortunately happy, because I think they're misguided if they're happy about this, right?
Correct.
Nobody should be happy about
it. Of course not.
I think what is really happening in the population is that people are damn vexed that it took this to happen, took sort of force now a conversation around the ideas that we are talking about here, which would be, what are the contingency plans?
And
Carrie?
That's it. And just this morning I was asking myself, what is our plan B? Because look at you. Let's say, for instance, Rudy, you're doing something, and then you say, wait now, you know, if I ain't had this pen, you know what I would do? I'll put a pen in my back pocket, if just in case when I reach in the office I ain't have a pen. You would automatically think of a plan B. So why haven't we heard anything like that?
And just for a moment, to digress just quickly, it didn't only have to be a plan B, as we said earlier, in energy.
It could be somewhere
else. It could have been plan B, C, D, E, F in many different areas.
And that is the problem that we have.
That is what people, what Dragon's, I don't know what word to use these days.
Make sure radio fan. Make sure, because I know you like bacchanal and confusion.
Maybe the Dragon sabbatical. is that a friendly
number?
Yes,
of course.
Maybe
take that.
Her sabbatical. Because, Carrie, I was making a joke with my friends yesterday. I say I feel this Dragon is a woman, you know.
What?
Because, you know, women like to play hard to get.
Well, of course.
But anyway, some men too. But I say this Dragon, she real dancing with we boys.
She's a nice lady.
She playing, you know, how all this play tricks.
But of course.
But no, and getting back to it seriously, that is what I think people are really upset about.
Well, agreed. That is what people are upset about. But to me, it's not even about a plan B or a plan C, you know.
Mm.
If you're making barbecue, you only make chicken.
True.
Yes.
What is the menu? What is the menu?
You have
I like these analogies that Javed comes with.
I love them.
So you have multiple side dishes to your main course, that we say it like that, right?
Yes.
And that you had to put together to make a meal. So the problem is, you feel like you only was cooking the chicken in this case.
Right.
And you wasn't focusing on anything else. Now, it's not that the plants didn't exist, and those those other fields that we're talking about and so on are in train. It's just that it doesn't feel, and certainly not from the media and certainly they're not from the government. Like they were going with the same gusto behind them, right? And because they haven't materialized yet, well, you know it wasn't going with the same gusto behind them. Right?
So just before the break, I want to make a point that there is need for greater transparency.
Yes.
Around. Now, people will hide behind non-disclosure agreements. But when we come back, maybe, Carrie, we could talk a little bit more about that. Why does it feel sometimes like these revelations are surprises for the public?
Right.
And could more be done to keep us in the loop so that there's a national conversation going around?
Of course, I agree with that. That's nice. But so far, we have a few voice notes. Okay. But when we come back from the break, we're going to play it. So get in touch, get engaged. This is We the Youth. Continue sending us those messages via WhatsApp 306-1065. And we'll be taking your calls when we get back from the break. If you're not joining us, good afternoon and welcome. It's just about 20 minutes after 4 in this beautiful, sweet Trinidad and Tobago. Oh, let's see. Sweet Trinidad and Tobago.
Sweet T&T.
Oh, gosh, you're going to start to sing? All right, all
always.
Right, all right.
Any moment you get
I don't want to drive out of Port of Spain in flood.
Good afternoon to We the Youth. You know, every day somebody puts up a solar panel and a windmill. Not just one. And that takes away from the energy requirement of oil and gas. And they're going more and more into using less pesticides and fertilizers and so on. I'm just saying that we need to take that on board, bear it in mind, and recognize that high price oil and gas that comes from the sea, especially that which has not been brought on board as yet, is always at risk of being abandoned eventually. Thank you.
And the caller, the message, is making the point. You know, Carrie, when we were, the old people used to say, make hay while the sun shining.
I thought you was going to say, don't run long, boss, don't run long, woman.
Well, that's another, that's next week.
All right, I'll take it back.
But no, what I take from that message, maybe two or three points, right?
Mm-hmm.
One is, we have a call?
Yeah, we do. Oh, you want to take
this
first?
Yeah, let's take the call.
Yeah, all right, let's see who's there. Hello, good afternoon.
Uh-oh.
All right, try me back. Hello, good afternoon. Okay.
So, point one, back. When we can commercialize, as Javed is saying, everything should be done to commercialize today.
Mm-hmm. Let's take it. Hello, good afternoon.
Good
You're
afternoon.
To
welcome.
Hey,
welcome to
up?
We the Youth.
Our problem is leadership. Our leaders saw the trees, but they didn't see the forest. And because of that kind of leadership, we are where we are today. They had no vision.
All right, buddy. All right, buddy. We in.
Well,
okay. All right.
Thank you for endorsing what Javed said at the beginning of the show. The second quick point from the message is that that transition. Now, I know from my work in the ESG space that the transition to renewables is not as dramatic as some people make it out to be. When
but
you
it's
look
also
at
also not as simple.
It's not as simple. That's yes.
Yes.
So
it's
also. You have to take it in its context.
Well,
and
let me ask a question to you guys then about renewables, right? Mm-hmm. Because people talk about it like this thing. Why are you transitioning to renewables? What's the benefit?
And most people will run and say to reduce our carbon footprint.
Good. So that's not the answer, right? Because that's not the answer.
Exactly.
So why we want to transition to renewables in a Trinidad and Tobago sense is for one reason only. First of all, when you transfer to renewables, right, you are freeing up gas.
Thank
that you don't have to use for electricity, and that gas,
which we spoke a lot about yesterday,
could go to the other areas, right? The petrochemicals and so on, which is more money, right? But in and of itself, switching to renewables just means that you could potentially have all the electricity generated from these sources, right? Which is important and is excellent.
Yes.
But that in itself is not a new source of revenue for the country, right? Hmm. So you could switch, you could have all electricity coming from renewables, and that doesn't affect your forex problem.
You
can't export that, right?
What we were saying yesterday is if we had created another ecosystem where we were attracting investment, let's say, in the renewable space, where, let's say, maybe solar panels would be manufactured here, for example. Mm-hmm. To your point, we could then earn the forex that way. And that's what we want to talk about now a little bit, about how can we look at some policies where if you pull one lever to use what you were, when you were talking earlier about how the money trickles down, right? In economics, we call that the multiplier effect. So if you were to pull one lever, let's see, which levers might we want to pull because those levers have a greater ripple or multiplier effect that would allow other sectors to produce forex, employment, etc. So
if we focus on oil and gas for a second, yes, because we already agree that the other sectors are important and we need to discuss that, but focus on the oil and gas. You need to get this thing done as quickly as possible, right? And we're already many years behind, right? So you need to have continuous bid rounds, mm-hmm, right? Which is what basically is a sale. You put out all the blocks out there, companies bid, and then they see if anybody get them, right? We've been using the same bid round system for decades now. And the world has evolved, and there are lots of different ways that you could go about doing these things, right? There are thousands of oil and gas producing companies all over the world, but we only showcase and advertise to the same people.
Interesting.
Right? You want another analogy? This is the analogy. You have a house in Ikakas, but you're trying to sell it to people living in Westmoreland.
Why are they doing it?
Right? You're selling, you need to match the thing, your asset you have to the type of buyers that exist, right? So there's almost a headhunting approach I think should be taken towards some of this acreage, right? To look for companies who fit the right size. And companies are not the ones that we know, the names that we know.
And just hold your other point, because I want to intervene and see. I don't want anybody out there to, how do we say it, Carrie? To
make sure it's radio friendly for me, please.
To jump out theirself.
Run out herself.
Run out herself. Yes. And come for jump.
But I thought you were a youth.
Because you're in the head. No, because Javed, somebody might turn around and say, oh, but that's what we do. Well, quite frankly, how do you expect us to have these conversations if you're keeping all of these things inside somebody, so say, their back pocket?
Yeah.
We need to have more transparent conversations around these issues.
That becomes the same way how we see only two specific companies paving our roads.
Well, that's transportation. But sorry, Javed, I just wanted to caveat, because sometimes in these conversations, after we have the statement, you hear somebody responding and saying, Javed, don't you know? Tell us.
The response I would have, if that was the case, was that effort does not equal results. Right?
Wow.
So
if all you're coming for these youths, all you better know, they have the answer.
Because so, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how much hard work, how much ideas, how much plans, how much policies, how much all of that you have. All that matters is the bottom line. Can you go to the bank and collect US dollars?
Are you talking like them old people?
Right.
Nobody's actually correct.
No, he's like, that's an excellent point.
Right? So the point is, whatever is done has to show up as results, right? If it doesn't already show up as results, you have to be able to show that it is coming and this is the timeline, this is the plan, and this is the execution strategy to get there. Right?
We have a call before you continue, please. All right? Let's see who's there. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to We the Youth.
Good afternoon to all, especially the guy with a brother or something.
Javed.
Yes.
I had to bring a good reality to Javed. It's totally theatrical and has nothing to do with really reality. For instance, the bidding wrong.
Lower your volume a bit for me. We are getting a feedback.
Would you be so kind as to give us your background that informs your opinion? Because he's given his background, so we know that he's technically experienced in this field and is actively working in the sector. So if you would like to debate his points, please give us your background.
Okay, although I don't agree that is necessary, but I am a civil engineer.
Okay.
MSc degree in management and project management, and an ardent follower of the issues concerning
each other. All right, that's fair. So you're saying you don't agree with him on a certain point. Let's hear what point you're saying he's being theoretical.
For instance, he talk about the bidding process, what is being used to get people to drill and so.
Okay.
There isn't much Exxon, two others, Repsol and BP, and these are the people you're trying to say that's a pyramid, it's a suit people. That is a highly theoretical. But the point I want to get as a young man, what were you to do? As a youth, you see the parliamentary system that the title when they have youth parliament and things? I don't have young men. I want them to forget that. Because it's a total waste. They come in the parliament to debate, to debate issues. They talk about we are about the people's business. Yet at the end of the day, the vote and all the votes automatically one political side.
So you're saying that the current parliamentarians don't actually vote on issues. They toe party lines. That's what you're saying. Yes, we agree with you, yes?
Yes, and for decades they're going along, they're saying that they're looking after the government, the people's business. When you come to it, you alone, who bring the note, whatever it is, don't have all the ideas. So you come and you share ideas when you're looking after the people's business and you're serious. So at the end of the day, when you vote, half a convention, you know what they have read, but invariably, before you reach there, you don't know what the result is going to be.
Right.
And then you have this new parliament, sorry.
No, we got you. But what are we looking at?
When an Aaron comes back,
right,
he can respond to the youth parliament because he's a former youth parliamentarian.
But what I wanted to find out, caller, we're looking at solutions here. We're looking to see how we can make this thing even better, especially in our oil and gas sector. So what are your thoughts? How can we improve that?
The oil and gas sector?
Yes. If let's take your point for a moment that we are fixed with the number of potential producing companies that we have. What would then be your salute? What are you expecting to see when the election season? What policy would you like to hear from? You don't have to call a name of a party, but what is the policy you would want them to express that would shift?
I would want to see that they not make mistakes in terms like what was made before the PNM intervened and they come up with contracts that
all right. Okay, no problem. So, thanks so much for your call.
Well, Carrie, I mean, that's what we're advocating for at the end of the day, is that we take on board younger people's perspectives, which we think will assist in not repeating the mistakes of the past.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they say, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Now, Javed, it's good to have...
Can we take another call?
Of course, yes.
Let's see who's there. Hello, good afternoon.
Welcome to We the Youth.
Hey, what's up? Talk to us.
Comes from any gas and oil.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There's a lot of riding in for is our oil bias. Kayala drilling oil right not too far.
Mm-hmm.
How come we can't find out?
So we're going to talk a little bit about Suriname and Guyana. We brought it up earlier in the first hour, so thank you for reminding us about that.
Yeah, he already.
I like debate, right? I used to be the head of my school.
I can respond to this idea.
So let's take on board both perspectives. So what's your response?
So we, on shore Trinidad in the last year, signed, I don't know if it's about a dozen blocks or so, 11 or 12 blocks, the small oil companies.
Yes, I heard the minister speak about that.
And you all know some of the names like Touchstone and Trinity and stuff. And some of them you've never heard about because they're new companies, right? Those are small fields, small little blocks that produce maybe a couple hundred, could produce a couple hundred, maybe a couple thousand barrels of oil per day, right?
And they all add a little bit.
Those are not the fields and the blocks that are marketed to the BPs and the Shells, right? Those are the biggest companies in the world. So you have to understand what type of acres you have, what are the costs involved, what is the potential production from it, and who have the pockets and who have the appetite for those types of things, right? Mm. So big, deep water and difficult and expensive things, you need your super majors in there, your Exxons, your BPs, your Shells,
your Chevrons. Right, because they have access to the capital and the engineering.
But the exact, to explain what the caller was saying, the same reason that Perenco has now bought a field from the Angostura field from Woodside, and they've bought four fields from BP, is because those fields are no longer economic for BP and Woodside, who have a higher cost base.
It doesn't fit their model anymore.
That makes sense.
Right. So
that's what you're saying.
So it's
find the company whose business model meets that field.
So Perenco coming into Trinidad actually took over Repsol's old fields. Because
you're speaking about what actually happens. This is not theoretical.
Perenco is a company that specializes in old mature assets and how to rejuvenate and keep them. Right.
That's how they are built.
There are other companies like that in the world.
There you go.
We didn't know Perenco was. A lot of people didn't know who they were before they came. There are lots of other companies like that all over the world that specialize in different areas. You could go out and headhunt them. No, a bit wrong is just part of the solution, and that takes some years to get there as well.
Right.
There's current things that can be done with policy. You ask them a policy.
Yes.
In terms of taxation and stuff like that, right? So you'll read some articles where they talk about even with the current production, the government could extract more from it in a few different ways, and it has to do some things with enforcing existing laws. It has to do with local content and having more companies that are local involved, because if you have more local companies involved, therefore
the multiplier effect is
right,
greater.
Mm. More taxes, more people.
Yes.
So you could extract a lot more revenue even from what we have, and that's on a policy basis, that's not on a technical basis, right? For example. And then there are the existing fields that are found and not developed, like the deep water we talked about, right? So there's a few different areas you could do that tackle now, medium term, and longer
and
term.
Long-term.
So we're going to go for a break.
Yeah.
And when we come back, we're going to speak a little bit more about this area of the discussion.
Of course. And guys, don't forget, you can give us a call, get engaged in the conversation. This is We the Youth from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. And remember, we are live on CNC3 from 3 to 4. And then the conversation continues on Freedom 106.5 FM.
Gary, good afternoon, and to the host. The Plan B and C and D that the government have at present is Plan B. Plan A is Dragon. Plan B is property tax. Plan C is tax, some other tax, and D is taxes, wherever taxes could be used. That is the plan they're going on with, beside the Dragon. Thank you.
All right, buddy, thanks so much for your voice note. Guys, continue sending us those messages via WhatsApp at 306-1065. And we'll be taking your calls. This is We the Youth. I know we have some more discussions to take right now, but we've got a call. Let's take it.
Excellent.
Let's see who's there. Hello, good afternoon.
Welcome to We the Youth.
Hi, afternoon. You're live?
Hello.
Hi, good afternoon. You're live?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, all right, try us back. We were hearing you loud and clear. So call us, 625-2257 or 627-3223. Let me see here. Let me just read a message. Good afternoon, guys. Is it normal practice for a government to enter into negotiations with large companies and reveal nothing to the public, like being national resources and assets?
So I could take that question.
Yeah.
Because I worked in spaces at a high level where we dealt with national policies, contracts, programs. It all depends on how, on a couple of things. One is how you negotiate the contract, because at a national level, there are certain countries that have open government legislation where we could sit right here in Trinidad and Tobago and we can go on different governments' websites in other countries and we can actually see what their public servants work for. Yeah. That's how open they are, right?
Wow.
Secondly, there are ways in which you can sanitize information that is of a strategic nature or a price-sensitive nature or a nature that would put the project at risk. There's a way to sanitize and package that information and still update openly with your citizens as to what is going on. Right. So the short answer to the question is that I find successive administrations hide behind this non-disclosure clause.
So if I could add,
yes,
add in petroleum contracts, there are many countries in the world, in fact the majority right now, that's public knowledge.
Right.
Right now I could go and pull up on Google any of the Guyana contracts with Exxon and anybody else, as well as in Suriname, as well as in any of the Scandinavian countries, Australia and so on, right?
Mm.
So our transparency with those contracts has never, maybe it never used to be the norm many years ago. It is more of the norm now in the world, and it should be public. Now, obviously, this one was this Venezuelan one was one, people would have loved to understand that and see that. And to me, there's no risk really, because it's not like several companies negotiating and they're fighting all together and they're competing here. This is just between you and them. Make it open to the public. If it has scrutiny and there's certain things that people don't like, it's fine, because it's fair enough, right? So that is one of the things I would advocate for, is more transparency in the sector, for sure.
Right, of course. So well, let's take a call. Let's see who's there, right? Hello, good afternoon. All right, try me back. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm sorry you cut me off, but recently, a few days ago, the IMF was talking to the Suriname Authority, and they said with any agreements with the oil sector must be put in the public domain. It must not be hidden from the public. What you do in the energy sector must not be hidden to the public. And I think Suriname has agreed for more openness, transparency, and disclosure in their dealings with whatever other company.
Yes.
Look at that. When the public knows, it will save the country, and that will be protecting the finances of the country. So I really support that one in openness, transparency, and disclosure. What we don't have here, we don't have that here. Thank you.
All right, buddy.
And
thanks
I will
so
tell
much.
You, Carrie, younger people are all about openness and transparency.
Yeah.
We grew up, some of us grew up where, you know, you would hear parents talking about something and they would tell you, could you please leave the room?
Yes.
Yeah. But the point is, if you think that you're protecting, I'm going with the benefit of the doubt, right?
Right.
If you think that by keeping all of these things under lock and key, you're somehow protecting the country and you don't trust the population's ability to understand, then I think as a leader, you're failing.
But that is how we feel. And you know what? Let me talk for me. That is how I feel. Because I want to be able to say, I am paying this in taxes. I want to see what you're spending the money on, who it is, and I want to see how you all came up with that person. And that is how, that's the reality.
So when you have mysterious industries like
mysterious.
The energy sector or economics and stuff like that, right? And you keep it mysterious, it allows, it means that most people don't understand what's going on, and it's much easier to fool people, right?
And there's a lot of distrust.
And so a key thing has to be simplifying information. We all hear that, right? If you can't explain it to everybody, then that means you don't understand it, right?
Yeah.
Simplifying information that is technical, whether it is to do with money and economy, whether it is to do with oil and gas, whether it's whatever it is, explain it, simplify it, make sure that a big part of policy is to make sure that the public understands these things.
Understands what it is.
And then you have the information there at your disposal. In fact, right now, right, you could get a full petroleum contract that's 200 pages, put it into AI, and let it give you a summary.
We said that as well.
So you don't have to be an expert to understand this anymore.
We have some calls.
Wonderful.
Yeah, let's take it. Hello, good afternoon.
Welcome to We The Youth.
Caribbean.
Hey, afternoon, welcome.
A long time I get you on this program.
Oh, God, you get you today.
We were waiting for you.
I was a new student in the program there, and I saw Johnny Abraham came on a UNC platform. I saw, all the unions join up with the UNC.
All right, Colin, that is irrelevant to the topic today, so try that back on another talk show.
All right, 625-2257 or 627-3223. I have a voice note here. Let me see if I can get that one, all right? Let's go.
Yeah, because I will...
Garvey, good afternoon.
Hey.
This is Krishna here. I was trying to get you, but I don't get you.
Hey, Krishna.
I saw you all while on the TV. Oh, God. You make my day. I didn't know you were so beautiful and nice.
Oh.
You're a queen.
Where are the flowers?
Where are the
flowers?
And the chocolates.
Feel nice. But I see you now. God, they make me little. I feel weak when I saw you.
All right, Krishna, thanks so much.
So, Carrie, we're putting your face on the flyer.
Mr., listen, hear this. I want chocolates.
I agree.
I want flowers. I want food.
I don't just want words.
And I
want it all. I agree. I send Carrie her flowers, her chocolates, her wine.
I'm taking it all.
And just remember, Carrie has two co-hosts.
But you know what I'm taking to our next call? Let's go.
Good
Hello,
afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hey, what's up? Talk to us.
All right. So, it coming to the transparency with the present government. The present government always hiding something. And you see, you have a guest there refer to when your parents talk into to go outside or go inside.
Yep.
Here we're going on. The government is not our parents. The government working for us, and that is our money. And we need to know what they're doing
exactly.
with it.
Exactly.
All right.
You understand?
Yeah, man.
So tell that guest that...
All right, no problem. We got
well,
to go.
He obviously didn't hear what I said, which is what I was saying, is that is not the way you should be bringing up children.
He probably missed that part.
We missed that part. But the point is that we are called our part, the Portal for Accountability and Representation of Trinidad and Tobago.
Spicy
and
today,
for people out there who would like to mobilize and support in ensuring government transparency, reach out to us at wemustdo@ourpart.org or call us here on air and get involved, because it's only by the citizens demanding this transparency, Kari. Mm. And we're talking about policy, right? So what we're advocating for is enhanced transparency in the energy sector. That's one policy. Mm. Javed, you had some other ideas that you wanted to float in terms of broader policy measures that could help. And I think maybe tie one or two back to people asking about Guyana and Suriname.
Right. So I think one, before you get to the policy, somebody had asked about, well, if Guyana has oil and why it is that.
Well, yes, right.
So there's more of a geology explanation. But if you look at it, the oil deposits in Guyana and Suriname are not related to the oil deposits in Trinidad. Right. Trinidad and Venezuela is part of that same basin.
Right.
Or Guyana and Suriname is part of their own basin. Oh. And even though there are some similarities in how it formed and where the source rock and then came from, they are not, there's no real...
It's not connected. Use a simple word.
Correct. It's not, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not that because Guyana have oil. In fact, I mean, we have oil too, right? And we have gas. So it's not connected like that. So there's no, you drill underneath Guyana and take the oil.
Take some of the oil.
Right? That is what we
like
was trying to do with Dragon,
like
actually.
That's Cartoon Network,
right.
You know?
Drilling underneath the border and going to Dragon. What's the plan?
Pulling this way and this way. No, but on the policy side then.
So good. So remember, there's different kind of policy things you could look at, right? One is around transparency on the sector in general, right? And I say, hey, make sure the public is educated, right. Understands us and all that. There's some, I guess you could call it optimization of the petroleum licenses and contracts and taxation and terms of local content and getting more, squeezing out more from what we have right now. Then there's incentivizing new exploration and so on, which is what we're talking about, the bid rounds and all those kind of things. The headhunting versus the way we're doing it right now. There's the existing fields that have more to squeeze out. And part of that is what's probably going on right now, right? Which is getting people like Perenco and other mature field companies to really tackle those things. Then there's the fields that have been discovered, not produced, not sanctioned yet, like the deep water we talked about and maybe some others. What does the government need to do to get those things going? Is it tax terms? Is it something else? Do they need to guarantee that, okay, we know that regulatory approvals from all these different agencies take 2 to 3 years. Can we guarantee that we're going to push this through ourselves and get it done in a year?
And that is policy too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Where we say our policy is to find a way to shorten that approval process.
If you told the operator.
So we need to take a really quick break. It's just about 10 minutes away from the top. When we come back, we'll wrap up and have our final discussion. So continue keeping it locked. This is Freedom 106.5 FM. We'll be back.
Are you tired of the same old boring drive home from work? Look no further. Get ready for the ultimate after-work rush with Freedom 106.5 FM's The Overdrive with Davey. Mondays to Fridays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Let Davey take you on a thrilling ride of non-stop entertainment and education. He covers the topics of the day, delves into the latest food and lifestyle trends, and brings dynamic guests from exciting professions to share their professional stories and experiences. Take advantage of this energizing and engaging experience. Tune into Freedom 106.5 FM. Mondays to Fridays, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. for The Overdrive. Overdrive with Davey. The ultimate way to end your day with a bang.
Welcome back to We The Youth, listeners. And today our hot topic is our inheritance, the oil and gas crisis. I am joined today by my co-host, Rudolf Hanamji.
Good afternoon again.
Our lovely normal drive time hostess,
Carrie V,
and our special guest,
Javed Rasa.
And now, you all hardly heard my voice today, and I think I have some suggestions of plan B's and C's and D's that we can do, and I want to straight out to Javed, and maybe he can interrogate it a little more before we close off the hour.
Mm-hmm.
So, Javed, we've heard people talk about the Guyana and Suriname. So what about having an agreement with Guyana and Suriname to produce their gas right here in Trinidad and Tobago, as opposed to doing the Dragon gas field? I know it may be a little more expensive. Those places are a little further away. But does that seem like a lucrative option as a plan B?
So as a technical option, is a no. Right, that would have been looked at early on in terms of, could you build a pipeline from there? Could you actually pipe that gas here? How would that work? What would be the cost be? And it's a very hard no That is not feasible at all, right? The opportunity for us in Guyana and Suriname is a couple different ways, right? One is what's going on right now, which happened not because of policy, but just because companies have no choice, which is you have a huge services sector in Trinidad who is participating in Guyana and Suriname in some form or fashion. So they are working over
which,
there.
Which, by the way, is not easy.
No, they are working over there. They, you know, they're getting paid in U.S. dollars. So there's some benefiting there. Now, the government could pave the way to help make it easier, to help make that increase.
Right.
We have a huge services sector in Trinidad. We have a huge sector that could benefit from that. The other part about it is that the government, through the state companies, NGC Heritage and so on, could look at taking a stake or stakes in some of the blocks in Guyana and Suriname. In fact, there's at least one I'm aware of in Suriname that is on offer, as in the one of the partners pulled out, and it's a current discovery,
right.
And they can look at taking some shares inside of there. It's an option. Maybe
that
they are considering.
Very
it. I don't
interesting.
Know.
But again, we don't know. You see, every time, Carrie, we have to say we don't know. That should be a flag for the general public out there. Mm. How many other things we don't know? But anyway,
now
the
cost of taking some of the shareholding some of these things. Now, assuming it gets accepted and so on, mm-hmm. it's not huge amounts in the grand scheme, you know.
Right.
As an initial investment, it's probably a couple $100 million, which is what we spend on all kind of nonsense anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a way to actually earn production sharing from other countries close by to us without actually owning the asset. We basically move the same way international, national oil companies take in other countries' acreage, you know. So it's an option. I assume that it's probably being looked at, but it obviously hasn't happened if it's being looked at yet, right?
Now, we have a voice note here. Let's see if we can listen to this. Let's see who's this from.
Hey, Gary, Kumar here.
Hey, Kumar.
To be honest with you, I mean, I work in the petrochemical industry, and we need our gas, right? That Dragon deal would be a plus for the country, but probably not handle it went down like this. But these industries need this gas additionally for years, right? To keep the country going, because apparently it's a petrochemical running this country right now.
Right.
And to get more gas, petrochemical need to open back up. Right. More drilling need to take place in order to get gas, storage. And apart from energy, right, I find whoever government come on power should look into other resources, agriculture, people that eat food, plant food, right, and export food. Right, tourism in Trinidad, to me, like, I know, because we don't have anybody come for vacation looking for nice beach, right? Just need to take place in Tobago, right? As you say, Star Island. But we need this gas to get the country running, and we need petrochem back on our island for both oil and gas.
And you know, Carrie, we mentioned that petrochem is a very sad topic for me. Because it really didn't have to...
Let me stop you there, Rudolph. You do have a caller on the line.
Yes. Let's take it.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon,
caller.
Good afternoon. Assalamualaikum.
Hey, what's up?
Waalaikum assalam.
Hey, man. Hey, I...
Namaste.
I got a good feedback on this line here, boy. And my radio off.
But we're hearing you fine.
We're hearing you good.
So you go ahead.
Right. So, right, on the Dragon gas and on the future of the petrochemical in Trinidad, right? I was one of the people who was against the pursuit of Dragon gas, right? So I was one of the people they might have thought that, you know, was against it. But we're not against the Dragon gas. We are just against the pursuit, because as Javib so eloquently elaborated, that it is a good thing for the country in many ways, more than one, right? But the problem is the geopolitical climate. It would be unwise for us to pursue it. We're not going to get rid of it. Before, when it was proposed a few years ago, it had a wire gate. Now it has a brick wall. We're not going to get through that. It has nothing we could do to go and change America's mind.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much for your call.
Just to augment a little bit what the caller just said, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think our consensus here, guys, is that it's not that we shouldn't have done it, but we should have done other things as well to mitigate the risk that we knew was baked into this
contingencies, as you like to say. I am into process and risk mitigation, so those processes, those contingencies would have helped. But that's all the time we have for today, folks. Do join us here tomorrow for an insightful conversation into agriculture.
Of course. And Javid, before we go, is there anything else you'd like to finally say before we wrap up today's edition of With the Youth?
No, I'm glad to be here. And I there's a lot more discussion to happen here, right? There's a lot more you could explain to the public. There's a lot more suggestions to come out. And hopefully we see some changes actually happen. We're going to have a new government either way, right?
Yeah.
So we want to see some changes happen.
And We the Youth, we're here, Carrie, to provide the platform to inform the policy from April 29th. We will be sending them our transcripts. And people like Javed and Aryan, all of the guests will be ready and willing to help build a better Trinidad and Tobago.
So just lastly, if you do want a part two to this, go to Freedom 106.5 Facebook. And once you hit 100 likes and we get 25 comments, we're going to do a part two to this energy conversation.
Of course. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today. Of course, I would not be here with you guys tomorrow. I think Davey's going to be there. So the conversation continues tomorrow.
So no flowers tomorrow. No chocolates tomorrow.
But I'll take it on Monday.
On Monday.
Yes. So guys, this is We The Youth. And of course, you can catch them here tomorrow. Same time, same place from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Freedom 106.5 FM. And we will be live on CNC3.
Yes.
From 3 p.m. to 4 p.m.
Mind and youth business.
Mind and youth business. Not you business. Youth business. All right, guys.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.